Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Happy Tuesday, Jeremy and Joe. We've got Sabres assistant coach Seth Appert in just a moment. Big stretch for the Sabres coming up. 6 out of 7 at home. And caliber of opponent.
Minnesota's good. Great, even.
Minnesota, Vancouver, the Islanders on the road. Then the Avalanche, Jets, Utah, the Red Wings, and the Rangers.
Woo.
So, between Rangers...
Well, if you're not tracking the league, Winnipeg's also like the greatest team we've ever seen. Although I think they maybe dropped one recently.
Yeah.
They were 15-1, though, at one point.
Yeah. So... Big stretch coming up for the Sabres in terms of playing against good teams. Minnesota's right behind Winnipeg, not that far back. Colorado, Utah, be interesting. 6 out of 7 at home, and we'll go to the Western Hotline and talk with Seth Appert of the Buffalo Sabres. Seth, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for taking some time today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome back. How was the trip? I mean, the winds obviously make it a lot better, I'd imagine.
The winds make the trip great. Anytime you can go on the road and have a successful road trip and get 6 out of 6, you're going to take that. We had some pretty good weather along the way, so we'll take that as well.
I was going to say, it's probably a good time of year to go to California, although Bay Area is always colder than everyone says.
Yeah, but it was pretty nice. Most of the days there were pretty nice. The one off day we had, in the Anaheim area was good weather, so... A little vitamin D doesn't hurt, but most importantly, the 6 points we come home with.
Seth Appert on the Western Hotline. His appearance brought to you by, here on WGR, brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. And by Steve Foley Law. If you've been injured, it's time to get serious. Time to call Steve Foley Law. Seth, how about the evolution of a season? You know, sometimes when you're going out for a road trip, you might say, it's a good time for this to happen. These Western Conference swings, sometimes it's only 3 games. Sometimes it's bigger. And I wonder how you feel like this fit into the evolution of this team for this year.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been the believer that the schedule's the schedule. We don't control the schedule. You just play the schedule. And you have to embrace the hard or the good, the easier parts, whatever it is along the way. And that was a hard trip. You're going out 3 time zones. You're playing 3 games in 4 days with some travel. You're playing a back-to-back against a rested team in San Jose. There's a lot of things that are set against you, and you have to, embrace that, those challenges, embrace that adversity, and find ways to give your team a chance to win. That's probably what we liked as a coaching staff. We did some things really good. We did some things we got to get better at. But as a coaching staff, I think we liked that. You're 3 games on the road in some hard situations. We gave ourselves the chance to win all 3 games, and we didn't let any of the games slip away from us, and obviously we were able to pull them out in the end.
Right. That kind of felt like the theme, Seth, of the trip. I mean, you guys never had a third – you never went into a third period with a lead, trailing in the San Jose game and then tied in the other two. So I'm imagining for the group, too, that probably does something of the game stayed close and then you pulled all 3 out in the third or in the one case in overtime.
You do gain some belief and some resilience through going through those things together and believing that we're going to find a way. Whether we're playing great that night or just okay, let's hang in there, let's stay in the fight, and then we're going to find a way. And I thought we played a great defensive game in L.A., and the penalty kill was outstanding that night, and we found a way to win a 1-0 game. The Anaheim game... We had a really good second half to that game, had a real strong third period and obviously won it in overtime. And then I thought the San Jose game, like I said, they're rested. You're not. They had better legs than us in the first half of that game. But we really had a good second half of that game. I think I'd have to look, but at one point I think they're out shooting us 26-14, and it was pretty close by the end. We probably outshot them 16-7-8 in the last 25-27 minutes of that game. So, but really important is the moments of those games on the road, especially when you're not playing as good or when the other team is outplaying you, that you hunker in and you survive those moments and you give your team a chance.
That's where, too, that so Reimer, who, but impressive, too, that it's only his third game of the year, first for the Sabres. He hadn't even played in the preseason, and he had the game he did. The save that was SportsCenter top 10, Seth, and was going viral that he made in the second period, like, that game's 2-1, and it's a shorthanded situation. Like, you can play the hypothetical in your head, but that's a big moment, too, because it goes to 3-1 if that isn't saved.
Yes, you need your goaltenders, and both of them were outstanding on the trip. I think, you know, you just look at the goals against, the San Jose game is the only one that the shots started to climb up there. The Anaheim and LA game, the shots were in the mid-20s against. So, but we received very strong goaltending. That save by Reimer in particular was spectacular. And I thought he did a really good job of making the saves he was supposed to make that night. But that save, and we had a breakdown to get over there and make the initial save on Celebrini was impressive enough. But then to have the wherewithal and the ability to find it and catch it behind his back to not allow a rebound chance, it was just an incredible save.
Seth Appert on the Western Hotline. Seth, you spent plenty of time coaching Jiří Kulík, and he scored a big goal on this trip as well. How has it been watching him make the jump here, and also what you're asking of him to do with this team?
Yeah, it's been fun to see. You know, anytime you get to spend those years in Rochester, especially when they're so young. And they're coming over, and Jiří came over at 18 years old. That's just that there's a lot of hockey you need to learn, but he's also a young kid away from home in a different country, not speaking the language that well. And so, you know, you go through lots of things together, and, you know, he's playing really good hockey for us right now. And then the fact that he could go on a three-game road trip, play center, and Lindy trusts him to have him out there in the last 5 minutes of games, last 10 minutes of games in overtime, as a 20-year-old center that only has 10 games of NHL experience under his belt, that says a lot about the trust that he's earning from the coaching staff and his teammates. And he's been around offense every game now lately, and in terms of scoring chances, and it was good to see him get rewarded with that one.
Yeah, he went 24 of 32, I think it was, on faceoffs on the trip while playing center. Is he, with your experience with him and then watching him this year, Seth, is he someone that you think naturally plays better at center, or is he someone you think throughout his career we're probably going to see him do both?
You know, it's interesting. I think his style of play, most a lot of people look at wing because he's such a dynamic skater and a attacking style. And but I would say in Rochester, we always felt he was better at center. And that's, you know, that's one thing to do it in the American League and another do it in the NHL. And it was a small sample size this week, but those three games were pretty impressive on the road. You don't control your matchups. He was, you know, to be that good in the faceoff dot, on the road is really impressive. And a lot of guys struggle offensively when they go to center, because the responsibilities of playing 200 feet, you have to go low in the D zone coverage, et cetera. His offensive numbers in Rochester actually jumped when playing center. It feels like he's a more dangerous offensive player at center as well.
That almost kind of reminds me of the story of Tage a little bit when he moved to center, just similarities at least on that front. And by the way, when he returns, I mean, with Kulík playing center here recently, I mean, would you file this under good problem to have that you can look at the roster and a fan could look at the lineup and say, it feels like they kind of have six centermen right now?
Yeah, I mean, you never can have enough centers because of injuries and depth. And if you can have two faceoff guys on the same line, especially if they're opposite hands, or if you get kicked out of the faceoff circle, you got another guy that can come in. So it's a really good problem to have. You know, Tage is getting close to being back. Hopefully we can get him. Then you have, you know, you got Cousins and McLeod and Kulik and Krebs and Lafferty, and there is a lot of center depth right now, which is really good.
Seth Ebert on the Western Hotline. What can you tell us about Tage, who it felt like was very close again and again and again with regard to potentially making a return?
Yeah, I think we'll find out more today, at practice and see how that goes, and then just go from there. I mean, these are, you know, you never want a player of his caliber out of your lineup. At the same point in time, you know, out west, we were in games 19, 20, and 21, and you want to be smart with your players and making sure that you don't put them in a situation that the injury can become longer, right? So, those are constant conversations between our medical team, our trainers, and our coaching staff. And I think we'll find out more here today.
You mentioned like games 19, 20, 21. Lenny put up the standings in the locker room, and I wonder your feeling on how much you should look at that, watch that. We were joking, last night's scoreboard watching, because I make the comparison to golf, Seth. You know, you can't win a tournament on a Thursday, but you can lose it. And for the Sabres, the last however many years, they've fallen out of the playoff race early and not been able to get back in it. And here you are in it. It feels like it might be game 19, 20, 21, but they have a lot of importance, and the standings being present there, a decision that you guys made. Like, how much do you want to be paying attention to that if you're one of your players?
You know, I'm a big believer in process. I think, you know, having the standings up, and we did the same in Rochester, the players know the standings. And so there's no reason to hide from your end goals. And your end goals are to make the playoffs, try to win a Stanley Cup. And Rochester is to make the playoffs and try to contend for a Calder Cup. But I also don't think here or there we spend a lot of time focusing or talking about it. We talk a lot about how do we make ourselves a better team? How do we make our individuals better players? And if we can continue to push the envelope in that regard, I believe the standings end up taking care of themselves. Are you a human? Yeah. Do you look? And if an Eastern Conference team is playing a Western Conference team, would you prefer the Western Conference team to win? Absolutely. You know, if an Eastern Conference team is playing an Eastern Conference team, would you prefer it to be a 2-point game? Absolutely. You know, so that's the human side of it. But you know, we're of the mindset, let's take care of our own business and making sure that we're continuing to get better. And we're a better team. We're a way better team right now than we were 20 games ago. It's not even close, but we're not good enough. We still have improving to do, and we got to keep making those strides to make sure in 20 more games we're a way better team than we were today. And that's our goal.
And do you view the next stretch coming up here maybe as a test of that? Because it's a lot of Western Conference teams coming up, but between Minnesota, Colorado, Winnipeg, like we were just talking about this, it's a lot of teams coming up at home, which is a benefit, but teams that are high up in the standings early on.
Yeah, I mean, Winnipeg and Minnesota are off to great starts. Both teams are playing fantastic hockey. Vancouver was one of the best teams in the NHL last year. They're a really good team. Islanders are a heavy team. Colorado, you know, is Colorado. And so you have a lot of high-end Stanley Cup contending teams and heavier teams on the schedule here in the next couple weeks. And those are going to be good challenges for us.
One other individual I wanted to ask you about, Seth. Owen Power is currently, I think he's only behind Cale Makar for defensemen when it comes to even strength points on the year. Would you label this as a breakout for him? I mean, he's already, you know, it's not like he's been bad in his first two seasons, but it feels like offensively, at least, the point totals are starting to climb more than they have in his first couple seasons.
Yeah, Owen's been really good. There's been games he's quietly dominated. And I say quietly because he does it in such a cerebral way. He's such an intelligent player. And so he can dominate in a lot of different areas, in subtle areas, defensively and offensively, where it doesn't feel, it just feels like he just made a lot of right plays as the game went on. Then you look at the score sheet at the end and you're like, oh, he had 3 assists, you know? And those are usually the best defensemen. The defenseman that can do it without dramatic risk and taking crazy chances. And that's been Owen. He's been able to create the most offense in the NHL 5-on-5 for a defenseman, with with not a lot of high risk, just by making the right smart plays over and over and over again. It's been impressive to see.
Seth Appert on the Wester Hotline. Seth, thanks so much for the time, and best of luck on this majority homestand. One quick trip to the island, but otherwise, you guys are home for a bit, so best of luck.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Seth Appert joining us here on the Wester Hotline. We go behind the bench on Tuesdays. Lindy Ruff plenty, some Seth Appert, some players along the way as we get through the season as well. Sabres play Minnesota tomorrow night. The Wild are just behind, like you said, Winnipeg's off to one of the best starts ever. And the Wild are 6 points back with the game in hand.
They did.
13-4-4.
I was just looking this up, though. I think they lost Kaprizov to an injury. Nope, never mind. He returned yesterday. So he's back. He was hurt. Now he's back. Yeah, the Wild, though, are off to a very good start. What do you want? 9 of 12?
Ooh.
Out of the 6 home games. So let's include the Islanders game. 7-game stretch. What do you want? 10 of 14?
Well, you got to get to overtime against the Islanders because they want you to.
Well, they're gonna want to also.
Yeah.
Well, let's play Islanders high. Let's just stare at each other for 60 minutes and not actually play the game. We'll just play overtime. Or can we do a handshake before? Hey, we each get a point. Let's just play 3-on-3.
Let me see what their updated stats are, because the Islanders have played 22 games and they have 5 regulation wins.
But yet they're like not that far behind in the standings.
No, not at all. They have 21 points. The Sabres have 23.
8-9-5.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. If you want to stay in a spot, I bet you got to go like 10 of 15. It is. They're graduating a little bit here early. We'll see if this remains. But in past years, we've been thinking more about, hey, are they above Ottawa and Detroit? And now, aren't we hoping to think more about Boston and Tampa?
Yeah.
In a sense, that's a graduation if you are going from Detroit and Ottawa to, hey, what's Tampa and Boston doing on a nightly basis?
Well, I don't know if your heart can take it, treating it like it's a playoff race right now, but I think that you should. You might as well pretend that it's March, but that March lasts several months.
Yeah.
Because like, this is where they normally fall out of it. This is where, if this home stretch goes and they lose games to good teams, even like run through it, Winnipeg is ahead of them, Minnesota is ahead of them, Colorado has 24 points, that's ahead of them, the Rangers are ahead of them, they've got tough games. So it's not even that you can't beat those teams. Of course you could. If you stay in it through a tough stretch like this, you know, you're asking 10 of 15, or what would you take? I would take that when the 6 of 7 at home is over, they are still in a wild card spot. That is victory. It really is, for them, treading water for, 61 more games.
Yeah.
But that's really you have to tread water. You have to, the wild card race, right? Who stays in it? The Islanders, the Flyers, the Blue Jackets, watch them drop. Mm-hmm. And just make it a race between Buffalo and Boston.
Right.
Okay.
Well, in reality, if you want to tread water for 61 games, not always. Sometimes a bad team gets lucky, gets a goalie hot, gets in. They get a lot of, you know, goals when they shouldn't, shooting percentage high. So it happens. But one way to be in the playoffs at the end is if you are legitimately good. And not all the way there, but I'm still feel like they could be. Still feel like they could be legitimately good. It's a combination of Luukkonen and their blue line might be great. It might be. Like, they've got 3 guys right now that are putting up offense on a nightly basis from the back end. I think I probably need more from the front end if we really want to say they're actually good. But I do wonder, like, Dahlin, Power, and Byram. Byram, by the way, is 3rd in the NHL in even strength points. And Dahlin stacks up points on the power play recently. So, like, I don't know. If they have 3 60-point defensemen or 50-plus point defensemen, like, that, not a lot of teams, I think, have that. But is that enough? You got to have scoring up front. And I can count on that from Tage and Tuck. And I don't even know if I can count on that from Paterka right now.
Right.
Like, when's the last time he scored?
It's been a bit. He's not quite looked the same as he did last year.
No. So that's my concern right now, is I still wonder if they have enough scoring up front. But what Lukanen's done recently and what the top three defensemen are doing has got me excited that they could be really good. I just got to get like two more forwards going here.
Pedroia's last goal was six games ago, scored against Montreal.
Okay, that's a minute.
Yeah. And if you go for how many games he has scored, and he had two against Ottawa, but number of games with a Pedroia goal,
yeah,
since October 22nd, the answer is two.
So in the last month plus,
he scored goals in two games. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't need them all to start scoring, but just give me Pedroia and one other guy. And then I feel like I could start saying, okay, no, this is a good team. This is a legitimately good team.
That kind of gets to the idea about, like, Jack Quinn has been
a ghost.
Right.
No, I thought he had his best game on Friday, though.
Right.
He was dangerous on Friday.
He's got one goal on the season, which is, I mean, for him,
it was empty net. He hasn't beat a goalie yet.
Right.
He has not beaten a goalie yet this year.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about Cousins here, who, you know, he had a lot of the spotlight for a little while there about where is his game. So,
I mean, you still could say that. He's got four goals on the year. Right, it's not like he's on a heater.
I don't want to sit here and say, well, if everything just turns around, they will be a good team. But they have a couple of players here, like those three that we mentioned. All three of them have been good before, have been really good.
Yeah, together.
Right. And it's not like I'm asking Yuri Kulik to score 27. I'm asking Pedroia to do that. He's done that before. So as they, you know, come together, learn the new system, Lindy's system, figure things out. Maybe that starts to come.
See, I'm at a point, though, where like I don't even care where it comes from. You want to tell me it's Kulik that does it, or it's Cousins, or it's Quinn, or it's Pedroia? I don't need them all to start scoring, but it's got to be more than what they've got. They've got to get one or two more than who we're scoring now. Like, they cannot. I don't think they can make the playoffs. I'll say it. I don't think they can make the playoffs if their only forwards that can produce on a night-to-night basis are Tage and Tuck.
I was just going to say, you know, it's a compliment to him because how he has played. But you don't think they can make it if Jason Zucker's their third best forward?
That's a good way to put it.
Right? Like,
yes.
He's been a good spark for them. He's been good. But
he's been their best free agent signing in 10 years.
Yeah. But you just... You just don't want that.
No, totally agree. Like, that's 100%. He can't be, and McLeod too. Like, I like McLeod. McLeod's a good player. But same thing. Like, he gets bumped up to number one center, and, like, same thing. He's super fast. He's good defensively. He makes a nice play offensively here and there. You see him play number one center, and you're like, that guy's not a number one center. Like, there's a little bit lacking offensively. Yeah. Like, same thing with him. You don't want to be counting on him to be one of your top scorers. But again, I don't think they want to. I don't think their build is, well, McLeod's got to be one of our important scorers. Their build would tell you that Pedroia, Quinn, and Cousins got to do it.
Yeah.
And Pedroia is still almost a point a game, but he's not been nearly as bad as Quinn and Cousins. But it's lower than expectations.
One more name for you. What kind of scoring should you be asking for from Benson?
I always struggle with him on that.
He's no doubt a great player. I think he's a fun player. He does a lot of things really well.
I just don't think he's got the shot.
Well, he's got three goals this year. He scored 10 last year.
Like, I watch him, and I'm so impressed with the mental part of his game and so many little plays that he makes. And then I'll watch him one-on-one with a defenseman and just know he's got no shot. He doesn't have the speed to get around him yet. He doesn't have the strength to get through him. He doesn't have the shot to score from distance. Like, Benson is only a productive player by his mind and his hockey IQ. You ask him to score a goal based on raw talent, size, and speed right now, he's got no chance.
803-0550, Sabres home tomorrow for Minnesota. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Yeah, I think we'll find out more today at practice and see how that goes, and then just go from there. You never want a player of his caliber out of your lineup. At the same point in time, out west, we were in games 19, 20, and 21, and you want to be smart with your players and making sure that you don't put them in a situation that the injury can become longer. So those are constant conversations between our medical team, our trainers, and our coaching staff, and I think we'll find out more here today.
Seth Appert with us on Tage Thompson, the latest on Tage, who did skate, went on the trip, looked like he might play, never did. So we'll see if he plays tomorrow against the Minnesota Wild. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy Tuesday. You know.
Bills are back.
It's Thanksgiving week. Bills are back.
Start getting into a routine. They'll practice, what, tomorrow? Will they practice on Thanksgiving? They'll practice on Thanksgiving, won't they?
Yeah, probably. Sal will be back for this week, of course, as we gear up for Bills and Niners on Sunday Night Football. Is it... all right, listen. Should I say this? Is it the least juicy Sunday Night Football game we've had for the Bills? Does it lack juice?
Is it a... is it possible, though, that it gains juice between now and Sunday? If I told you right now Purdy's going to play, is it juicy again?
I don't know. I think the way that it gains the juice back is win it and win the division. If the Packers beat the Dolphins, now it's home game prime time to win the division. But even then...
see, I don't think that's juicy, though, because there's nobody that thinks they're not going to win the division. Like, it's housekeeping, isn't it? I mean, I guess you can celebrate it in the stadium. They'll put the video message. They'll put a video probably up or a thing at the end of the game on the scoreboard. But
yeah,
I mean, how many Bills fans at the game on Sunday will think they have already clinched the division?
Basically, they kind of have. The Bills are basically kneeling it out.
Right. But like, what I'm saying is like, it's not gonna be everybody, but yeah, there might be 10,000 casual Bills fans at the game on Sunday that when they see that go, oh, I thought they already clinched the division.
Right.
Like, my friend's been saying for a month that they've had the division won. So that wouldn't do it for me personally. It's more about the opponent. It's more about the Niners. Are they a legit challenge? Is the game going to be close? Would you expect that it's going to be close? And if they're banged up with a quarterback that can't throw, then maybe not. But I don't know. They're still the Niners on some level. I think if Purdy plays, again, this is a big if. If he doesn't play, then it's a joke.
Yeah, it's tough if he doesn't play.
Other than everyone will make their jokes about how Allen 17 is playing Allen 17.
803-0550. I have a question for you on the Chiefs. You and I talked about this months ago, and I want to know if you feel any differently, if anybody else out there does. So the Chiefs, the story on the Chiefs is what? They're winning too many games at the end. They had an overtime coin toss win against the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
They had a blocked field goal against Denver. They had to kick for the win against the Panthers.
They needed Isaiah Likely's toe to be slightly out of bounds in
week
one.
They needed a 4th-and-16 or 4th-and-13 pass interference to beat the Bengals.
Yep.
And the narrative, or at least the conversation, I shouldn't say narrative, the conversation, if that's the same thing, around the Chiefs is they don't look great. Right now on ESPN, Rex Ryan says there's no explosiveness. You're lucky you have the greatest quarterback on the planet, do you? And that conversation needs to keep going. It's kind of like tied in. We currently live in an NFL world where you're not allowed to say anything about the Chiefs because they win the Super Bowl. They have to lose.
Mm-hmm.
They have to lose to allow everybody to say things about them again. They don't look that good. Oh, quiet. Shh, they're going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I have to wait to see if they do. Because they annoyingly do every year. Here's Rex calling Patrick Mahomes the best quarterback on the planet. How many other guys would get that benefit of the doubt with 15 touchdowns and 11 picks or whatever he's got? He's had a couple nice games against some bad teams. It's like we don't get the chance to experience the regular season, and Bills fans know what this is like. You might feel great. What's a Chiefs fan going to tell you? The Chiefs could be 4-7, and they would say they're going to make the playoffs and win the Super Bowl.
Right,
and you would have to say... well, maybe. Because they always do. At some point, they won't, and we will all get our lives back. It's terrible. The Chiefs, if the Chiefs were to somehow win the Super Bowl again, I know people love to tell me dynasties are good for the sport and yada yada. They already have a dynasty. They have reached peak mass. I don't know what the phrase I'm looking for is, but it would be bad if they won again. It will make it look like regular seasons aren't worth watching. Mm-hmm. And we're already almost there.
If they were to win again this year, it would feel like there's no hope at all. Like this team.
Not even no hope. It's so boring.
Right. And it's that. I feel like you are hearing the criticism. You are hearing the doubt. You are hearing the, no, this ain't it. This is... all the one score games and the stat comparisons, and like, I am all here for, forget for a second they won the previous two championships, this version of the Chiefs, and compare to other teams that had similar records what they look like. All the one score games. I saw the stat from the other day that they have the worst, second worst point differential of any 10-1 team ever. So there have been...
Is the other like Minnesota last year or something?
Philly last year.
Okay.
Well, and they're third. So there have been 86 10-1 teams in NFL history. This is the second worst point differential at plus 52. The 76 Raiders are the only team with worse. And you see the Eagles on there. You see one seed Titans on here from a couple years ago that lost in the first round of the playoffs. You see, not in the 10-1 record, but you compare them to Minnesota a couple of years ago winning all the one-score games. In Pittsburgh, what do all of these examples have in common? We were all right about them when we got to playoff time.
Right.
All of them. Tennessee lost in their first playoff game to Baltimore. Minnesota lost in the playoffs to Daniel Jones and the Giants. The Steelers got out of the playoffs immediately. They gave up 45 points to the Browns with Baker Mayfield, if I have the right year. Either way, they got out quick. Like every other example of a team like this that has a record like this that only wins in a one-score game, we were all right. We haven't really been wrong yet. Even the Chiefs of last year weren't like quite this. They were putting up bigger numbers by the end of the season. They had a couple of blowout wins along the way. It doesn't matter who they play, if it's Carolina or whoever, it's going to be last play of the game. It's going to go there. Hope it goes their way. And so far, it's gone their way.
It always does.
Except for the time Josh Allen got in the way.
Right. We'll go to Jay in Hamilton on this. Hey, Jay, good morning.
Oh, my God, guys. I cannot believe we're doing this. We cannot be talking about burying the Chiefs. It's like saying Beetlejuice three times.
Who's talking about burying them?
Let's hope we're not talking about them being so... My point is, I feel like the Chiefs are that team that's going to just come out and suddenly put it together, and I like them struggling, and that's not talking about it. It makes me feel much better.
But tell me, how are they going to put it together? What's the answer?
They always do.
Because last year it was a simple answer. Rashi Rice showed up and was a number one wide receiver. He's not there. How do they do it now?
And they played a bunch of injured teams along the way in the playoffs.
Right. So is that the answer?
Yeah. I think ultimately, I think we've always said this about the Chiefs. They can do it until they prove they can't. And they always have found a way. Are they struggling this year? Of course they are. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, for me, we know the one thing that the Bills have not done is beat them in the playoffs. And until the Chiefs show that they can't do it, I'm always going to be in the back of my mind waiting for January to show the world that the Chiefs can finally be beaten. But that's why. So I'm here thinking Chiefs are still number one until they're not. That's just how it's going
to
be.
Thanks, Jay. That's why I said they need to lose. I can't wait to get my life back. I can't wait until we all have a time in our lives where we can say we see things with our eyes and it's okay to say them instead of being like, man, they don't look that good. You got to respect them. Oh, okay. I have to. I'm required to. If this gets back to our training camp conversation. If it's the Ravens that win the Super Bowl, I will be praising the football gods. Thank you. Someone else. And of course, I want it to be the Bills, but I just need to be able to say a team, you just laid it out, Joe, they're the second worst point differential in the history of 10-1 teams. And you're not allowed to say it in the eyes of some because, well, they're going to put it together. And they might put it together this year. And that would be so annoying. That's where I land. I want to again live day to day and not have my only conversations that are day to day in the NFL about the MVP race, but about who might win the Super Bowl instead, because people are open to the idea that someone else might.
We just haven't seen it in a long time. Last year's Eagles they won the NFC. It's very different, I know, than winning three Super Bowls and winning back-to-back. But weren't there probably people last year when they were 10-1 with the same problem of point differential winning close games that were probably out there saying, oh, no, guys, they won the NFC last year. They went to the Super Bowl. They're going to win the NFC again. They'll figure it out.
Yep.
They Super Bowl pedigree.
They did.
And then they didn't.
Did they lose like 5 out of 6?
They lost 5 out of 6. Yep. They didn't figure it out. It was true the whole time that they weren't as good as we thought. 10-1. Pittsburgh probably got the same treatment. Guys, Tomlin and Roethlisberger, Super Bowl pedigree. They're 10-0. They'll figure it out. These close games, they'll start blowing them out. And then what happened? Well, they didn't figure it out. They didn't just have the answers. They couldn't flip a switch. And again, the Chiefs have won 3 Super Bowls, so there is a different level of pedigree there. But I don't know.
Right.
I want to do now is go look at New England teams. Like, did New England ever have a team like this that had to win games with blocked field goals and 31-yard kicks against 2-win Carolina teams?
That's a good question.
And foots out of bounds. Like, the Chiefs are scraping by in these games. New England, did they ever have a season like that?
Probably. They had some dominant teams, of course. They had plenty of times where it felt like they got lucky. I'm not burying them. I'm saying for all of our sanity, they need to lose. I don't care if it's fall apart, first round playoff loss, that's what I need.
Okay, here you go. So New England, in the Brady era, 15 times, this is crazy, isn't it? 15 times, oh no, this isn't through 10 games. They never had, though, a point differential lower than 106.
Okay.
That's their lowest. And most years they were up in the high 100s and into the 200s. And the Chiefs right now are at 52.
Yeah.
So, I'll look through 10 games. But for the full scope of the season in the Tom Brady era, they never had a team like this that was averaging winning by 3 a game.
Just need them to lose. Has to happen. 803-0550 if you want to join in. Thanks, Jay, for the phone call. Maybe the Bills are the team that does it. Maybe it's somebody else. It is Tuesday, Thanksgiving Day week, Thanksgiving week, Black Friday week, all that stuff. Extended weekend for many of you out there. Enjoy it. Prepare.
Tomorrow, Thanksgiving Survivor?
I mean, we haven't done...
Is it still a thing? Have we done that recently?
We could do it. We could.
Or we can just rank side dishes.
Tomorrow, what we should do is tell Thanksgiving disaster stories. That's what we should do tomorrow.
Thanksgiving disaster stories?
Yeah, like the time I had my turkey caught on fire. That one, like that.
I don't know. I'll have to think. I'm sure I've got something. Thanksgiving disaster stories.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 on WGR.
Eric Mangini says he wants the Jets job.
Okay.
How long till Herm Edwards says he wants the Jets job? We're just going to get former Jets coaches one after the other saying they want the Jets job.
Mangini would be funny.
Hey, funnier than Rex.
Close.
It'd be more ridiculous, wouldn't it? He hasn't coached in 10 years.
Why the teddy bear turned down a slice of cake?
The teddy bear turned down a slice of cake. Why?
He was stuffed.
That's good. That's good. That's a good one. That's like an 8.6.
That's a good one for Thanksgiving,
that's
too.
A good Thanksgiving
a
one,
A good
yeah.
stuffed joke.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, use that Thanksgiving. I nearly had a fire. I mean, not nearly. I had a fire a couple years ago.
You had a fire?
I had a fire.
Then you were smoking the turkey?
Yeah, yeah. There was a fire.
In the smoker?
Yes.
Hmm. How big a fire? Like, it was put out quick, or was it like a real fire?
It was a situation.
Like, did we have to get to where's the fire extinguisher?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
I deployed the fire extinguisher.
Oh, you deployed it?
Yep.
On the turkey?
No. I pulled the turkey to safety, and... Because the grill was on fire. All right.
So the fire wasn't big enough, though, it was still at a manageable level where you could get the turkey out.
Manageable is a phrase there. This is a turkey that was going to serve a bunch of people. You know, when I would open the smoker, that's when the flames would hit. You know, you get the oxygen.
Yeah.
And a situation going on there. So I closed it and thought, what am I going to do?
Because the next time you open it, the flames are going to fire out again.
How am I going to get this smoked turkey off of this grill when it's going to be flame broiled soon once I open this back up again?
What is on fire in the smoker?
Aha. So what happened was I had recently smoked wings, and a wing had fallen back down behind way into the back, and that's what caught on fire. I didn't know it was there. So that's what happened. That's why I got to clean your grill. I cleaned it, but it snuck all the way back into a spot I didn't see it, and that was the culprit. But I pulled the turkey, and I moved it inside, into the oven inside, cranked the temperature on that to try and finish it off there. And then, yes, fire extinguisher.
Oh, that's a hot wing.
Yeah. you know, little Thanksgiving excitement. That was probably, that was 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. Turkey was fine.
Do you now check for food in the back every time now?
Yeah, I mean, for a smoked turkey on the, for a turkey on the smoker, going to, you know, clean it out, the fire pot, all that. You're going to make sure you have a good situation prepped for the turkey.
Okay.
There's also, for people that deep fry a turkey, you have to be very careful
that's a nightmare just waiting to happen. I mean,
well, yeah, because there's a, right? Can it explode?
I mean, it can explode. The oil can spill out, I think, right? And, like, you got to do it in your garage. Or you don't have to do it in your garage, I guess. You can do it in your driveway or whatever. But, like, I don't know. I see these homemade devices where we're levying the turkey down into the bucket. And just, like, it all seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, I mean, you can do it right. And you do have to lower it in the deep fryer. But you got to know with certain things. You don't put a frozen turkey in there because it will explode.
Okay. But I'm sure there have been people occasionally that don't know that.
Right.
They put the frozen turkey down.
Make sure you get the information to not explode your turkey. I feel like the fire departments are constantly putting out information about, hey, careful if you're going to deep fry turkey.
Oh, yeah.
All right. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. It is Tuesday, Turkey Day week. Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. Great time of year. Although the weather's not been great. We had a great fall this week. Bad. Up until this week, it's been great.
I think we still have to claim this as fall.
Yeah. Five more days. December 1st is winter. Welcome to winter. Sorry.
What if December 1st is like 60?
Doesn't matter. It's winter.
I don't think it's going to anyway.
It's winter. You can say it's unseasonably warm, but it will still be winter.
So are you rooting for... there could be snow from like November 27th to December 1st. Is it important to get the snow back to December 1st that the fall got through entirely without any snow?
Oh, I don't care. No.
I think it's like a record. No snow accumulation at all. Like, I think this late, I think is like one of the longest ever.
Is that right?
I think I saw that, yeah.
Been a great fall. 803-0550 to join us, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.